The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How are you, sir?
This is Peter.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
They don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I got a couple dogs. I had a prof in college. He said that it was humans' ability to use language that makes us the dominant species. Well, I don't think that's all of it. I think there's one other thing. I am not afraid of a vacuum cleaner. Good to have you. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Hope you're not afraid of calling. Promise no vacuum cleaners on this program. We will attempt to sweep away some of your emotional struggles. 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal is the number to call to get onto the program. You will speak to the loquacious, semi-pugnacious Eric Dumont. He will take your call screaming. If you have a call about some circumstance in your life that's giving you a little distress or puzzlement, or maybe these are tougher ones, but about someone else, an emotion, a piece of behavior, something you would like to get rid of, or at least dampen a bit. If you have a suggestion for someone else, we had a call like that yesterday who had a veteran mother call in to talk about how she got her kids to eat. We have people who call in with generic type questions. Does hypnosis work? We had a question just a couple days ago. Is it against the church teaching? We have questions that are my favorites, which are where does psychology and faith intersect? Where do they collide? Where do they cooperate? So, want to hear from you. Love to hear from you. You make the show. 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number. Good Lord permitting, right after this program, I'm heading up to Brighton, Michigan. Although it's not real Brighton out there right now. It's kind of cloudy. Brighton, Michigan. Holy Spirit Church. Give a talk at 7 o'clock. And then, for those of you with our Trenton affiliate in New Jersey, as I understand it, Point Pleasant, New Jersey, is not more than a couple miles from the Atlantic coast. Sunday, 3 p.m. at St. Martha's, we'll be there. And then a return visit Monday night, St. Martha's. Going to do two different talks, one on the faith, one on standing strong as a parent and grandparent. So, looking forward to that. There's the business out of the way. Life rule, according to Life Manual, page 74, subsection C, paragraph 2. It is easier to talk good than to act good. Because you get credit for talking good. Grandma, I know I haven't been over there for a long time, but I'm planning on it. Sometime in the next couple weeks, I'm heading over. Now, there you go. You got credit talking about you're going to go see your grandma. How nice. She's all pleased. You said it. And what are the chances you're going to get there? I know you got so many trees in your yard. Give me a call when some of those things dump. I'll be over there to give you a hand. Of course, when you see the call coming in, you got caller ID. You know who it is. Just doggone leaves again. Okay, so now what? Well, I'll just see if he gets it done. Pretty much in everything, it is easier to talk what you're going to do than to actually do it. I do that, don't you? Yeah, I know. We got to get together for lunch. It's been a long time. Let's get together for some lunch, okay? Don't put it off now. It's coming up shortly. We'll get together. That was 2 years ago, I think I said that. But there is one area where it seems to be easier to do than to talk. Maybe there's more. I just can't think of them right now. And that is talking or doing an I'm sorry. Some time back, I went to the florist. I wanted to get my wife a flower. Didn't want to overdo it, you know, buy 12 dozen roses for $6,254. Just, you know, a little cute one flower. That's really nice. Okay. Now, I figured, you know, I got her flowers when we got engaged. And it's about time to get her another one. You know what I mean? Get another flower. So I asked the lady behind the counter. I said, like a rose, please. And maybe could you put a carnation with the rose? You know, friendship and love. Isn't that cool? She said, sure, what did you do? Huh? What did you do wrong? Well, what makes you think I did something wrong? Well, most of the guys who come in here buy flowers when there is nothing of a holiday. They did something that they want to apologize for. I said, with flowers? They want to apologize with flowers? Yes. I said, well, you know, with my best Barney Fife, yeah, that may be some of those other guys. That's not me. No. My wife and I have a very different relationship. You have to understand that. And so I got the flowers. I went home. I was all excited, like a little kid, you know, a little kid who goes into the field and he pulls a couple of stinkweeds. That's what we used to call them, stinkweeds. You bring them in when you're 4 years old and you hand them to your mom, and she's got to make a big deal out of it, and she puts it in a little vase and everything. And she's really nervous about throwing them out because they're wilted and they've been there for 2 weeks and they're falling over. And, Mom, did you throw my flowers away? Now, my mom used to throw those stinkweeds away after 2 days. She was Italian and everything was always real neat in the house. Boy, I messed up my self-image, you know. So I had the flowers. Presented them to my wife. She smiled and said, what did you do? I said, huh? Raymond, what are you apologizing for? And I said, were you ever a florist? People will say, I may not say I'm sorry, but I act I'm sorry. I become nicer. I become more mannerly, more pleasant, more affectionate. I'm showing that whatever altercation or disagreement or clash that we had, I'm over it. I'm over it. And I'm ready to act I'm sorry. Don't ask me to say I'm sorry. Now, wait a minute. That's gone a little too far here. But I'll act it. I'll let you know that I'm not holding any grudges. That I recognize that I may have been 6-7% wrong in the whole altercation. So what I'll do is I'll pretend, I'll act as though it's all gone. It's done. We're past it. No more need to think about it. No more need for me to say I'm sorry. Why is it saying it is harder for many than doing it? It's the exact opposite in everything else in life. Much easier to say the good intention than to do the good intention. Must be something about those words, huh? Something in I'm sorry that conveys a lot that you don't want to convey. I was really wrong. I was more wrong than you were wrong. You're going to think that you're never wrong and I'm wrong. I don't need to say I'm sorry because you did just as much as I did and you're not saying you're sorry. All kinds of excuses for not saying I'm sorry, so it's better just to go buy a flower. You ever notice though women don't buy flowers for men? I've never gotten a flower from my wife. I've gotten a tire iron, and I've gotten some WD-40, and some new razor blades for my shaver, but I've never gotten a flower. Wondered about that. Say it, and then act it. That's the best combo. I'm Dr. Ray. In a moment, your calls.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The state has responsibility to orient things, but they can't take over the rights of the family, like in China, to have one child and that's it. It's a disaster over there. How many tens of millions of abortions have gone on? And one of the things that, as a result of that, is because of the preference to have boy children rather than girls, you have, for every 1,000 boys, there are 850 girls. This is a great imbalance. Same thing is going on in northern India. So this is where the government cannot take away the primary and inalienable responsibility of married couples and families. And they cannot employ methods which fail to respect the person and fundamental human rights. Beginning with the right to life, the government cannot force you to kill innocent human beings and still be a humanistic government. It's an evil government.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live.
Dr. Ray Guarendi doing my own stunt voices. No body doubles here. Pronouncing all difficult words myself. Avoiding all known forms and to-be forms of psychobabble. I am not comfortable with where you're coming from. I can't go with that. I'm hearing what you're saying, but I'm not sure it's the best option in those circumstances. Caesar from Georgia called yesterday. He was waiting on the line, and he called back. First up, according to our ever-present promise. Caesar, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dr. Ray?
You ain't doing well if you're having arguments with your wife.
Yeah, no, that was yesterday. You know, I'm like, it's a new day.
So she agrees with you now?
No. So the background is, you know, she's a nurse, so she's been dealing with the medical field for years. And me, and she also reverted to Catholicism recently, a couple of years ago, but she still struggles with understanding the teachings of the church on certain, you know, situations. But when it comes to this topic of the medication, we have three kids. My oldest is 14 now. She did have, you know, a lot of hyperactivity when she was younger, but now she does lack a little bit of attention at times with the focusing, but to the extent, it's not to the extent where, you know, I would suggest, you know, her being on medication. And I've always been against medication only because I know that it's not a solution. In some cases, I know it's good for certain, you know, patients or people, but for my daughter, I'm like, you know, she'll be fine without medication. You know, I'll commit myself to helping her having a good eating habits and not eating so much sugar.
How adamant is your wife that your daughter should be placed on medication?
She's pretty, you know, adamant about it.
It's going to happen. In other words, it's going to happen no matter what you say because she's the health expert.
Yeah, and I told her, you know, you have to take in consideration what I think as the father because
she thinks you're not medically enlightened enough.
Correct. You know, okay. I'm the spiritual one, and she's like, well, God's not pretty much the main one.
How old is your daughter, Caesar? How old is your daughter?
14.
These particular attention problems. Now, let me make sure I understand this. This is the attentional type of attention deficit. This is not the impulsive, active,
correct,
distractible type. Okay. So the first thing I think your wife needs to know, and this is research, and you can tell her this, the medication is nowhere near as effective for those who are have problems focusing. It's not. She can look it up. So that's the first thing. Second thing, if you can remember all this. If you can't remember all this, go to the Ave Maria Radio Archives. Andrew usually puts it up very quickly. Look at the date, and you'll hear me answering your question.
Yes.
Secondly, attention deficit, whichever way it manifests itself, either through spacey attention problems or impulse activity problems, is a developmental disorder. In other words, it is present early in life. If there was no indication in your daughter's early years, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, that any of this was a problem, and it just, quote unquote, started happening in middle school, then you really have strong evidence this is not ADD. These are other factors. Third, there is evidence that indicates that when you work on the parenting, you get the parenting more in charge, you get the parenting more of a follow-through, more supervisory, more consistent, you can dramatically improve the child's symptomatology. I will routinely get folks in my office who will say, somebody has brought up the ADHD diagnosis, usually a teacher, and they will say, as there are other things we can do? And I'll say, okay, let's work on what is happening. Let's work on what your child is doing, what you're doing as a parent regarding discipline. Much of the time, if they do what we talk about, they will come back and they will say, well, you know, some of the stuff is still there, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was. And I'll say, well, then are you still thinking of an ADHD diagnosis or an ADD diagnosis? Not really. Is the teacher complaining as much? No, teacher's noticed improvement. Okay, because that does confirm the research. The research says, especially with the behavior problem type stuff, that stronger, better, more consistent discipline has a very positive effect. So, those are just the things I want to tell you, Caesar, about this. Obviously, I can't say whether or not your daughter should be on meds or not be on meds. I don't know. I don't know your daughter. But those are just some generic principles. All right, buddy. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you, Doc. Have a good day.
Hopefully it gives you a little bit more info you can check out.
Yes, it will.
I got you. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
Holly from Brentwood, California. Hi, Holly. Holly, you there?
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Holly. Thanks for the
Hi,
call.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Sure. Go ahead, Holly.
Are you there?
Yes, ma'am. This is your microphone.
Okay. Thank you. I'm dealing with my 83-year-old mother who we found out 2 weeks ago has terminal lymphoma, and she's at home bedbound, and she had never been an active person. And so part of what I'm dealing with is trying to bring her comfort first of all, and she has a deep belief in God, and she doesn't seem to be afraid of dying, but it feels like she's not ready. And so I just sit with her and comfort her, and I'm feeling this enormous like regret, guilt, disappointment, loss of my own, like judging her, not spending enough time with her, or being mean to her. I was abused by my stepfather as a child, and so I don't really carry that against her, but I'm just feeling like this huge regret of, you know, just over my lifetime of how I've interacted with her at times. And so I'm looking for ways to kind of get beyond that and comfort her in this dying process. So that's kind of where I'm starting here.
You got two levels here, Holly. You got two levels.
Yeah.
The first level is yours. First level is yours. You're looking back and you're saying, in so many ways, I could have been better toward my mom.
Yep.
And you are a wonderful voice for anybody listening who is thinking, yeah, sometimes I just get frustrated with my parents. I know I should be a little more patient. I know I shouldn't get all upset when they do what I don't want them to do, et cetera, et cetera. And you're experiencing what many of us would experience. I experienced that with my own parents. Even though I wasn't neglectful of my parents, I often said, could I have done more? Okay? So what you're experiencing is pretty typical. I would suggest you tell your mom that. Hey, Mom, I got to tell you, the fact right now that you're in health problems is making me think back. And I'm thinking back in a lot of ways that I should have been a better daughter. I should have been more helpful. I should have been more understanding. Just so many ways I should have been better, Ma. And I just want to tell you, if I had it to do over again, I would be. And you know what your mom's going to say, Holly?
Yeah.
She's going to say, oh, no, Holly, no, you were a wonderful daughter. Thank you for that. But no, no. I'll bet she'll say that. Will she?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
yep,
I know
she will.
I know. So, but that's okay, because you're telling her, hey, Mom, now that you're ill, you don't have to say, Mom, now that you're on death's doorstep, you don't have to say that.
No, yeah.
But you say, Mom, now that you're ill, you're making me think. And I'm thinking back, and this is just something that's forced me to look at myself.
Yeah.
And all the ways I could have been a better daughter. That's what you do. You tell her that. You acknowledge it. She won't accept it, but you'll get a chance to say it. And I think, and the second level will be, I think that'll comfort her too, because you're saying, how is she going to be more at peace with this? How do I make her more at peace? It may be, Holly, that she's more at peace than you are.
Yeah, that's true.
Are you projecting onto her what you yourself would react like if you knew you were facing very, very close death, and you're thinking to yourself, I'm not sure how I would deal with this. Oh, my gosh, she's got to be dealing with it the same way. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Ask her this. Holly, ask her this. Hey, Mom.
Okay.
Are you kind of excited to meet Jesus, to go on the other side? Do you wonder what it's like?
Okay.
Ask her those things.
I've
hey,
been
Mom.
Afraid to ask her those things because she seems, it's like she doesn't want to be ill, and she's crying a lot, even though she's always been very religious. But maybe I should just go ahead and ask her, because I do wonder how she feels about that.
Yeah, and you're not saying to her, realize, Mom, you got to think about this stuff because you're right on death's doorstep. You're not saying that.
No.
You're just more or less asking to bring to the surface this faith that she's always lived with, but now when she is facing her own earthly mortality, she's a little nervous about this whole thing.
Yeah.
My mom made a wonderful observation once. We were at the funeral of somebody. They were much older. And I said to my mom, I said, you know, why do so few people think about their own mortality, especially as they get very, very close to it? You know, when you're 90 years old, it's very reasonable to think at any time here something's going to go wrong. And I said, why do you think that so few people think about this? And my mom said, I guess as long as you're still breathing, you think you're going to live forever. I just thought that was a heck of an observation. Thanks, Holly. Thanks for calling. This is Dr. Ray.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
You as a parent apply Galatians 5. Is watch your kids as they move into the religious space, if you want to put it that way. I, you know, made noises about the priesthood on and off when I was a little kid. My parents were never oppressive about it. They never pressed me in that direction. But they would quietly indicate an openness to that, or like, that's a good thing. I remember I still have it upstairs, a Bible that my parents got me for Christmas in 1969. I'm a little kid. And it's, you know, from Mom and Dad to Bob, Christmas 1969. They knew, they sensed I was kind of interested in religious things. So I would say that, don't be pushy, of course, but don't go the other direction. That's, my generation got too much of that, was, back off. Who am I to tell you what to do? You make up your mind. No, I think gently, quietly, affirming that, yeah, that's a good thing you're thinking about. And you should be open to that.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Is it impossible to live Jesus Christ's command that the marriage bond be indissoluble? No, says the Catholic Catechism. The Lord has not placed too heavy a burden on the shoulders of a married couple. By coming to restore the order of creation disturbed by sin, Christ himself gives the strength and grace to live marriage in the new dimension of the reign of God. By following Christ, renouncing themselves, and taking up their crosses, spouses will be able to receive the original meaning of marriage and live it with the help of Christ. St. Paul, in a letter to the Ephesians, emphasizes this when he admonishes men to love their wives as Christ loved the church. For this reason, Paul says, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
I am looking at those questions up there on that board. Right now, they are all very, very good questions. I want to love to get this. I'm going to ask the folks waiting. Please be patient. I got enough time to get to you before we get to the end of the show. I was at a hotel, and I was speaking to a woman who looked like she was from another country. And I asked her. She said, yes, I'm from Nigeria. And I said, you're here for school? She goes, yes. She's working also as a hotel receptionist. So what do you notice, the biggest difference you've noticed about your country's culture and ours? She didn't hesitate for one second. She said, oh, your children. So what do you mean by that? She goes, oh, our children would never be permitted to act the way your children act. She's a third world country. I talked to a friend of mine I used to lift weights with. He was in Saddam Hussein's army. He surrendered during the Gulf War, and he's now used for the Marines to train. And I asked him, Raheem, do you have the kind of 15-year-old out-of-control problems we do? He goes, oh, no. I said, really? Why not? And then he explained why they didn't. I don't have time to get into that right now. But this segues me right into Tom from Omaha. Hello, Tom.
How are you, Dr. Ray?
You see the same thing I've heard about, right?
Right. I've traveled all over the world, literally all over the world, all cultures, religions, the whole works. Rarely, if ever, do you see a misbehaving child. They don't even talk or anything like that. They stay with their parents. They do as they're told, and that's that. That's everywhere in the world that I've been, and I've been a lot of places. You get off the plane in the U.S., and you walk into the airport, and you know you're home. And the reason you do is because there's kids running wild. They're screaming. They're taking up seats when there's old people that have nowhere to sit. And all that kind of thing. And they're begging their kids, get me this at the kiosk and all that. Something is definitely wrong in the United States the way we're raising our kids. It's not normal.
How do you?
It's not healthy for the kids.
How do you speculate that across multiple cultures, there seems to be better behaved children compared to the U.S., which seems to have more than its share? Worldwide share of unruly kids.
I think, and of course, what do I know? But I think that it's because parents in other countries, whether they're first world, third world, whatever they are, really and truly have more interest and more love for their kids. Whereas in the United States, that's not so much the case, I think. And the parents are lazy. Frankly, they're just lazy. All they want to do is just sit there, let the kid run wild, and what do they care? And whereas if you're in Sweden or Somalia or anywhere, the parents are more attentive to their children. And the kids know it. They feel that. The discipline, the love that discipline demonstrates, the children know it and realize it, and they want to be good.
I think that's as good an explanation as any. I think also we're materially very wealthy. Therefore, we're spoiled in that respect. That's absolutely for certain compared to the rest of the world. We live higher than the first world, other first world countries, no question, materially. And that redounds to our children who become acceptable that this state of affairs is the way it should be. They are entitled. You're right. I think there is a high percentage of parents who don't do what they need to do to raise their children well. Absolutely. I see that all the time in the world that I live in of parents and kids. I also see this, Tom, and I see among, I mean, most of the folks who listen to this program, I think, are very loving, committed parents. But they, too, talk about their discipline problems. And I see the influence, I think often the adverse influence of experts. The experts have really twisted parents' heads all over the place. They've confused them. They've paralyzed them. They've made healthy discipline a dirty word. They have implied that you have to be psychologically correct in the way you approach your children, because if you don't, you have all kinds of percolating, unseen psychic problems that are going to be down in their little heads. So I think those are all factors. But I've experienced the same thing you've experienced, Tom. When I talk to people from other cultures, I say, do you have this kind of adversarial type of behavior that we have so much of in the U.S. from kids? They said, no, we don't. Some don't permit it, and some are like you, which simply say, no, we will deal with this. We will be attentive, but disciplining. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that very much. Appreciate it. Okay. Boy, I got to get to everybody. Cayman, Houston, Texas. How are you?
Oh, hello.
There you are. You're on the air, Cayman.
Oh, so I'm going to try and make mine as like quick and simple as possible. Although I also want to say, love the broadcast. A lot of great stories, testimonies to hear. Nice. So I work at a bar in a kitchen. I deal with, you know, it's a pub kind of atmosphere and mentality. And some of the phrases I've kind of heard in the broadcast over the few days, there was one that talked about how penance is kind of understanding that sin is, you know, it's terrible, it's a bad thing, and there's a lot of examples given, you know, talking about, say, abortion and how gruesome that is, and we can all go, okay, well, that's inhumane. And of course, like, sins of the flesh, like pleasures of the flesh, right? You know, that's a very obvious thing, and maybe people, you know, they'll commit it, but, you know, the penance goes, okay, hey, you know, that's the wrong thing to do. And then living in glory is to live without sin, right? And so as someone who works in an atmosphere like, say, a pub or maybe entertainment industry, you know, gosh forbid, but like something along those lines, even if they're trying to live in that ideology, you know, we're all going to fail, you know, because we're fallible as people. And of course, we're always going to seek glory. What do you suggest for people in those situations? Is it okay that I drink on a Wednesday night or drink on a Thursday night, but I make sure to repent on a Sunday? And it's like that, I feel like I'm getting away with something I shouldn't be getting away with, but I also want to rejoice in being alive and enjoy life, you know?
Well, the Catholic Church is not a fundamentalist religion. The Catholic Church has no problem with alcohol. It has a problem with alcohol to excess. So we're not a church that says you can't have wine and you can't even have whiskey. We're the church says it is something that you do not take to excess. You don't get drunk, all right, because now you put people at risk. You put yourself at risk. So just for that narrow part of your question, that's the answer. But the part about general sin, yes, you're right. There's no way around it. We're all going to do it at some level. The key is, I think, for anybody who wants to follow Christ and his church, the key is to be aware of how you fail, and then to, one, want to do something about it, and to have remorse that you did it. Now, just because you have remorse doesn't mean you're not going to do it again, because you will. But I think, as a psychologist, I see this all the time, you got to be aware of what you're doing. I can't tell you how many people are just simply oblivious to the way they're not living well, and they don't even know it. So the one, I think one of the great advantages a Christian has is that self-introspection to say, I want to live better. I want to live more like Christ. I got to keep taking a nice, honest look at myself, but I don't get scrupulous and I don't despair.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is The Logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. Have you ever appreciated what you can't not know? What is it that you know without thinking and take on faith? You know, for instance, that you have to breathe, but normally you don't think about it. Stick out your thumb. Look at it. Without it, you could not pick up a pencil. You can't not know that you have breath or thumbs, and yet you have to think to pick up that pencil. Are you holding your breath? Do you think it's time to breathe? Today, go on social media and tell someone you appreciate breath and thumbs. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
Let us strive to know the Lord. Quick question to you and me right now. Is that what you and I are doing every single day? When you and I wake up every day, do we strive to know Jesus or not? In the Old Testament, in the same book of Hosea, a little bit later on, it's in chapter 14, the Lord says through the prophet, my people perish. Or in another translation, my people are being destroyed because of a lack of knowledge. Not a lack of data. We got tons of data. Not a lack of information. We got a lot of information. Not just about things that are happening in the world. We got a lot of data, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information about God. But not a lot of intimacy with God. Not a lot of relationship with God. Not a lot of friendship. That's the cry of God's heart. God wants to give himself to us in the incredible gift of friendship. And we're not taking advantage of it.
I still got time to get to those of you up there. Sue. It's Dr. Ray. Thanks for joining me. I wrote a book three or four books ago called Advice Worth Ignoring, How Tuning Out the Experts Can Make You a Better Parent. And one of the pieces of advice that I said to ignore was pick your battles. So that's a very misleading piece of advice. Now, John from Jefferson City, Missouri, says he always hears the term. Now, he doesn't hear it from me, that's for sure. But it is a very, very common expert piece of advice. Hi, John.
Hello, Dr. A.
What do you think they mean when they say it?
That's a good question. That's why I'm asking you. I don't know, because tolerating bad behavior is what I get out of it.
Well, that's the biggest danger, which is, let's say, for example, you have a 15-year-old. And this 15-year-old has a very disrespectful type of attitude. And sometimes that manifests itself in snotty talk. And other times it just manifests itself in rolling eyes. Now, the pick your battles piece of advice would be, well, okay, now wait a minute. Now, 15-year-olds are like that. Okay, if it's disrespectful words, do something about it. But rolling eyes, come on, just ignore it. Okay. So you're right. In that sense, it says tolerate ugly behavior if it's not too ugly. Or let's say, for example, the kid's room is a pigsty. It's below city health code. There are Japanese soldiers in there from World War II that don't know the war's over.
Right.
So the expert advice is, well, it's their room. Just shut the door. Don't worry about it. And if there's any wild animals in there, get a steel door because they can gnaw through wood. Well, wait a minute.
Well,
what if you don't want part of your house landfill? What if you don't want part of your house looking like that? You have every right to say, I want that room cleaned. Here's where I...
Well,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's funny that you picked an analogy about rolling your eyes, because this is exactly where I got that question from when you had the show a while back. Several callers calling in about rolling eyes, whether or not that was sassing or a tolerable behavior. But and I remember hearing a lady say, well, you got to pick your battles. And actually, my 16-year-old boy had been doing that lately, and I lost it. Because he would make a noise under his breath and roll his eyes when I would tell him something. And he'd done that, I think, one too many times, and I kind of lost it. I was bad. But he hasn't done it since.
Well, you got to discipline him. You don't have to lose it. See, what you did is you'd had enough. He did it 27 times, and on number 28, you went, that's it. I'm tired of that. Instead of stopping it back when it first happened because it's wrong. Here's where I suggest to parents, if you're going to pick your battles, here's what you do. If it's not a matter of irresponsibility or immorality or disrespect or uncooperativeness, then you can let it go. Let's say, for example, my little kid used to watch TV and he'd stand on his head and he'd look between his legs. Okay, well, that's goofy, but it's not doing anything wrong. So I'm not going to look at him and say, Andrew, sit down, please. Watch TV right. No, I didn't do that because there's no moral issue there. There's no parenting cooperation issue there. Or let's say he was in bed. And while he's in bed, he's singing. Well, I don't care. He's in bed. All right, you want to sing yourself to sleep? Go ahead. Your singing stinks, but I'm not going to tell you that. But that's what I mean. If you're going to pick your battles, pick it when it's not a moral issue, it's not a defiance issue, it's not an oppositional issue. But all too often, when the experts use that phrase, what they mean is, well, go after the really big stuff and the small stuff, just let it go, just ignore it.
Right.
I think that is horrible advice. Horrible advice.
That's why I don't listen to experts, Dr. Ray. I just listen to you.
Well, here's a question. No, have you ever heard of the broken window theory?
I'm sure I have. But...
It has been cited as being responsible for the dramatic plummet in crime in New York City. Rudy Giuliani used the broken window theory.
Right.
And what this theory says is, for some time, law enforcement looked at the big offenses. It ignored couches burning on the sidewalk. It ignored broken windows. It ignored graffiti. Just the petty minor offenses it ignored because it was going to deal with the big stuff. Well, what they found was it created an overall impression that nobody was in charge, which emboldened people to do more serious stuff. When they took a very low tolerance toward even these minor types of mischief, social assaults, everything dropped. Murder rate plummeted by 80%, 90%. It just dropped. Now, they don't do that anymore, and of course, the murder rate's exploding in New York City.
Right.
But when they did that, and I think that was kind of a broad-based sociological parallel to pick your battles, because the cops were picking their battles. They picked the big stuff. They ignored the little stuff. And what happened was, when your son rolls his eyes at you, well, that's demeaning. That's nasty. He's being very ugly to his father. So when he does that, you ignored it because you thought, well, he's not cussing at me. He's not throwing bricks. He's not kicking over a chair. I'll ignore it. Well, you saw what happens. He's getting a little more bold. There you go.
I ended up yelling at him, and he knew. He knew he had crossed the line, and but it hasn't happened since. So.
Well, next time it happens, do something about it. Don't yell about it.
Right, right. I agree. Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Thanks for the call, man. Right. I got to run.
Thank you, doctor.
Okay. Back to your calls momentarily. I'm Dr. Ray.
Relax. The doctor is in.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
The Archbishop of Detroit, Alan Vigneron, published a little booklet called The Beauty of Truth, and it deals with this very question of words and the use of words. And it's a great sorrow, the Archbishop points out, when the quantity of words being expressed is at an all-time high, and the consequences of ill-used words are causing more harm to the cause of truth and the good of the human soul than maybe ever before. Are we part, as I say, are we part of the problem or are we part of the solution? Are we constantly carping about society, church, media, police? Because if so, we're gonna have to go out of our way to demonstrate this kind of patience with one another, to let people think through things rather than, you know, immediately slam them with, I've got the answer for you, buddy. Words matter.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
That sound like music from The Ventures. Remember that group? They did Wipeout, Walk Don't Run. Melanie from Oregon had a similar situation with our previous call. Her mother also passed away, and Melanie said, I want to share a little bit about my experience when all that happened. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, how are you, Dr. Ray?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for calling. I really like what all the girls call me. This is really cool. I never had any girls ever call me ever. And now I had to get old, and they love me for my mind.
And it's your lucky day. So what I wanted to say, was my mother's devout Catholic, and my husband came into the church a few years ago, and he kept saying, you know, your mom is getting old, and she's not going to be around much longer, and we really need to tell her how much she's meant to us. And so I put it off, but I finally did. We have a large family. And so when we went back to see her in June, I said, you know, Mom, I just wanted to thank you for keeping me in the Catholic Church and bringing us all to faith and all that. And she just looked at me with shock. And then she just kind of laughed, and I said, no, I really mean it, Mom. So we had a really good conversation, and then my husband was able to tell her the same thing. And then there was another time she said, I'm really afraid. I don't know. I'm so afraid. And I said, are you afraid to die? Well, yes. And, you know, she had some dementia. And I said, Mom, we're all going to be okay. Please don't be afraid. I said, Jesus is waiting for you. He's just waiting, and you just need to let go when it's time, and he'll take you when it's time. And so we were on our way back to see her when she was put on hospice, and all of a sudden I got this vision of her getting up out of the bed with this joy on her face, and she just ran into the arms of our Blessed Virgin mother, and then I got the phone call that she had died, and she died very peacefully. But we were able to tell her things, I think, that she needed to hear that helped to make it easier. And you just shouldn't be afraid to tell people all the good things that they've done for you, because she never heard that from any of us. So.
Well, Melanie, I'm going to take that good advice of yours, and I'm going to stretch it back a few years. I'm going to say, let's do it now before people are facing their mortality.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we don't know.
Yes, because you've said nothing. So. This whole time we've been talking, you have said nothing about what I meant to you and how I've helped you, and not a word, not a word. And don't think I haven't noticed it.
You mean the world to me. How's that?
It's a little better. Well, I don't need the world. Maybe Western Hemisphere. Yeah.
Well, anyway, thank you for taking my call.
Melanie, that's a beautiful thought. Thank you.
Okay, have a great day. Bye-bye.
I'll talk to you. Now we go to Roseanne from Virginia, and I'm very familiar with Tourette's. I had a number of children when I worked in the schools, severe behavior handicapped classrooms who had Tourette's, and I've had some experience with it close by. Hey, Roseanne, how are you?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. How does this Tourette's manifest itself? Facial tics? That's really the most common.
Right, and I think it may be more than one thing, because there's anxiety, which is very evident, and maybe ADHD. So there's a lot of, like, impulsivity, emotional outbursts.
That may not be Tourette's, you know. That may not be Tourette's. That just may be his style.
Well, I know they were diagnosed with Tourette's, and I think ADHD. When they were young, but I don't think they ever I don't think they were treated. I think now they're going to counseling, and I think they're using cognitive behavioral therapy, and but the poor choices with rash, not thoughtful decision making, responding quickly.
Roseanne, I got to just straighten up something for me. You're dating this fellow, right?
I am. Well, I've put that on hold.
Okay, these are not his children. This is him that you're talking about.
This is him. Okay. This is him.
Tourette's doesn't make you make poor choices.
Right.
If you're talking about a history of anxiety, poor choices, living life poorly, and you say, well, could that be due to the Tourette's? Could that be due to the ADHD?
Right.
Definitely unlikely to the Tourette's. Tourette's predominantly manifest themselves in facial tics or maybe other body type tics. It's kind of a mild form of epilepsy. However, sometimes they can be emotional outbursts with Tourette's too, but that's a little less common. But that doesn't mean every emotional outburst he has is a function of Tourette's. It could be lack of self-control. It could be emotional immaturity. It could be a bad history where he hasn't really learned to live well.
Right.
So you have to make a decision as you look at the whole picture. And you say, well, whatever his diagnoses were, this is how it's manifesting itself. And unless I see dramatic improvement, I'm gonna delay this, if not eventually end it. That's your decision. But you look at the whole picture. You don't look at the Tourette's and the ADHD and say, well, once we get those cured, he'll be fine. If there are personality issues, those are much more durable.
Right.
So that's kind of the decision that's facing you.
I think you're right. Absolutely. That's why I called. And I just really needed confirmation. I mean, it's on hold, the relationship.
Well, I'm not going to tell you what to do because I don't know the relationship or your potential boyfriend. But I can tell you the generics of the situation. And you look at everything that's going on and not just those particular diagnoses.
Right.
All righty.
Okay.
You're welcome, my dear.
That's very good advice. And I thank you so very much, and God bless you.
All right. Thank you, dear. Thank you for the call. Nice calls today. Nice folks today. Real nice. I appreciate that. And Andrew Krucek, thanks for producing. Eric Dumont, thanks for call screaming. And all of you, I appreciate the company. I'm heading over, as I said, to Brighton, Michigan tonight. Wait a minute. I'm going to make sure I got the parish. Holy Spirit Parish in Brighton, 7 o'clock. Hope to see you there. Thanks for joining me. I'm Dr. Ray. Walk with God. Always, now, and forever.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.